It is Friday, November the 9th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here. Coming up, another deadly mass shooting in the U.S. Also, the aftermath of this week's U.S. election.
I would like to see bipartisanship. I'd like to see unity. And I think we have a very good chance of, and maybe not on everything, but I think we have a very good chance of seeing that.
One observer thinks times are ripe right now for another conflict like World War I.
The advent, if you will, or the rebirth of fascism, the rebirth of nationalism, the rebirth of unstable societies who are becoming completely taken up by the advance of their own identity.
Also ahead, we'll have a visit to a historic apothecary museum, plus some sounds from the world of music. But here's the news, folks. The investigation underway into the mass shooting at a bar in the U.S. city of Thousand Oaks, California, left 12 people dead there, and we get the latest from AP's Ed Donahue.
Paul Delacorte with the FBI says the crime scene and gunman Ian Long's home and car are being processed for evidence.
At this point, we do not have any indicators of other associates or there are no other threats to the Los Angeles area.
Delacorte says it's too early to talk about a motive. California Governor-elect Gavin Newsom blamed the country's gun culture.
Suffice it to say, the response is not just prayers. The response cannot just be excuses. The response sure as hell cannot be more guns.
Newsom says mass shootings do not happen anywhere else on planet Earth. I'm Ed Donahue.
The shooter was a Marine Corps veteran, Ian David Long. He was 28 years old. He apparently killed himself after gunning down those customers in the Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks. Investigators are looking for clues to Long's state of mind before Wednesday night's late-night shooting. The political landscape shifted in Washington this week in the wake of the 2018 congressional elections. Opposition Democrats won back control of the House of Representatives, while Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate. The election returns amounted to what many see as a split verdict on President Trump's presidency, as we hear now from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
At the White House, President Trump talked up the possibility of working with Democrats now that they will control the House.
I would like to see bipartisanship. I'd like to see unity. And I think we have a very good chance of, and maybe not on everything, but I think we have a very good chance of seeing that.
Trump also took credit for Republican gains in the Senate.
Well, I think the results that I've learned and maybe confirmed, I think people like me. I think people like the job I'm doing, frankly.
House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi left the door open to working with Trump on health care and other issues.
We will strive for bipartisanship. We believe that we have a responsibility to seek common ground where we can. Where we cannot, we must stand our ground.
Democrats were happy with taking the House, but disappointed with the poor showing in Senate races. Former Congressman Patrick Murphy appeared on VOA's Plugged In.
Not nearly as big of a wave as I was expecting or a lot of other Democrats out there. And I think this really shows it is less about the issues and more about Donald Trump.
In the wake of Tuesday's election, the political path forward in Washington is uncertain, says Washington Post analyst Karen Tumulty.
It's really a mixed verdict here. It's like the blue wave met the red wall. And I think that it's, as a result, probably going to be pretty difficult for our allies around the world to figure out what's going on, other than, you know, probably a lot of gridlock out of Congress.
Some cooperation between Trump and the Democrats is possible, says John Fortier.
There will be things that can get done, but they will require both the cooperation of Democrats and Republicans, which is hard because they're far apart, but still possible to do some things, but not the Trump agenda.
But the president could back away if Democrats launch oversight investigations of the White House, says Molly O'Rourke.
Life will be very different in the Trump White House with a Democratic Congress that has the ability to challenge him in terms of his legislative agenda, but also in terms of the way the administration is being run.
In the wake of the midterms, President Trump appears both embattled and emboldened politically, and already looking ahead to what promises to be an intense re-election fight 2 years from now. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And still ahead, the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I. This is VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Is there a leadership deficit in Africa? Does the continent lack leaders who are compassionate about their citizens and believe in strong institutions? Host Shaka Sali returns to lead a discussion on the importance of strong leaders and strong institutions on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. A U.S. federal appeals court is weighing a case that challenges the constitutionality of the appointment of Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who is leading the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election and whether anyone in the Trump campaign colluded with Moscow. More now from AP's Jackie Quinn in Washington.
The challenge to Robert Mueller's authority comes from Andrew Miller, who has defied a subpoena to testify before a grand jury about his former boss, Roger Stone. Stone, a longtime associate of President Trump, is under investigation for his connection to WikiLeaks, which published damaging emails stolen from the Clinton campaign in 2016. Stone's former aide, Miller, is claiming the deputy attorney general did not have the authority to appoint a special counsel. That claim is now in the hands of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Sunday, November the 11th, will mark the 100th anniversary of the signing of the armistice that ended World War I, in which roughly 40 million people died. The United States entered that war in 1917 after declaring war on Germany, and by the following year, its contributions were vital in tipping the conflict in the Allies' favor. The intervention marked the beginning of America's deep involvement in European security, but as Henry Ridgewell tells us now from the wartime battlefields in France, some fear the U.S. sacrifices are being forgotten.
Touring wartime battlefields this week, French President Emmanuel Macron warned of current threats to the continent, telling French radio that Europe must create its own army.
We need to protect ourselves from China, from Russia, and even the United States.
French officials said relations with the U.S. would be unaffected by President Trump's Republican Party losing control of the House of Representatives in midterm elections. The U.S. president will hold talks with Macron Saturday. It's not clear whether a rumored meeting between Trump and his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, will go ahead. Trump will later visit Belleau Wood, scene of one of the most ferocious battles fought by U.S. troops in the war. 1,811 U.S. soldiers were killed as they attacked German positions. Much of the fighting was hand-to-hand combat. After more than 3 weeks of fighting, American troops took Belleau Wood on June 26, 1918.
When they were confronted, as we'll see, by intense enemy fire, instead of ducking, instead of retreating, which by the time of the war would have been the normal attitude of troops and waiting for the artillery barrage to relieve them, they charged.
By the end of the war, over 116,000 American troops had died defending Europe. 100 years on, transatlantic ties are strained, but the alliance endures.
Relations between these powers, they're not always easy, and there are reasons for that. But when you get out here, where the people in these villages remember, and there's a great respect for the American soldier.
The nearby Romagna 1418 Museum depicts life for soldiers on the front line using thousands of recovered items from the battlefields.
What I try to show in this museum to the visitors is that if you take off these helmets, it's all the same, it's all human beings.
40 million people were killed on all sides during the conflict. They will be remembered Sunday at the Armistice Day ceremony at Paris's Arc de Triomphe, attended by dozens of world leaders. President Trump will later take part in a separate Veterans Day ceremony at an American cemetery. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News at the wartime battlefields in eastern France.
Michael Boire, a retired military officer, is a professor of military history at the Royal Military College of Canada, that's in Kingston, Ontario. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty that so-called Great War was a mistake, actually, started by accident in the summer of 1914 when Europe's leaders were all on vacation. He said given the lack of modern communications, French and German mobilization made the war inevitable, affecting not just military personnel, but also civilians.
First of all, in the military sphere, this is a war like no other. It's a war of great technology. It's a total war in that not only are armies, navies, and now air forces brought to bear against one's opponents, but now the entire population of a country is involved, either through military service or through the great and terrible industrial war that was fought to simply to outproduce the opponent. Now, the French have a very unique experience of the war because the French are motivated in great part by hatred. The Germans have already seized, many years before in 1870-71, two of the largest departments in France, two of the largest provinces, Alsace and Lorraine. So the hatred which motivates the French soldiers all through the war is visceral, and it tends to create casualties because there's no holding the French back. The Germans, of course, are reacting according to a plan brought forward by the General Staff in order to attack westward towards France and then eastward towards Russia to, in fact, establish themselves as the masters of Europe with a view to world domination.
This was a truly mechanized conflict. Some would argue that the machines outpaced the tactics, and that's why you had so many casualties.
The internal combustion engine powers the vehicle, makes the truck possible, and makes the tank possible. And if you look at what airplanes looked like in 1914 and what they looked like 4 years later, there was an enormous technological push. For my money, the most important piece of the technological advance, if you will, is in the medical field. We learned about taking care of people who are in deep shock. We learned to transfuse blood. Very complicated operations are made possible through sheer practice. And the care industry comes into its own because, of course, not only are many, many people killed in this great war, but there are enormous numbers of handicapped people who must live with these traces of war for the rest of their days.
As world leaders gather in Paris to mark the 100th anniversary of the end of the so-called Great War, what is the message today about this conflict?
For me, as an observer, as an historian, it can happen again. There is a convergence of confusion and a conversion of instability throughout the world. And we see this now with the advent, if you will, or the rebirth of fascism, the rebirth of nationalism, the rebirth of unstable societies who are becoming completely taken up by the advance of their own identity. We play the identity game at risk to ourselves, and this game is being played throughout the world. Now, I'm not suggesting for a second that another great conflagration is around the corner. What I am suggesting is that some of the conditions are coming together to increase instability to the point, just like in 1914, where an accident can happen.
And Michael Boire also told VOA's Victor Beatty he's not just speaking about the use of weapons of mass destruction, but the threat that the 9/11-style terrorist attacks might become commonplace. That, he said, could result in global instability, with nations lashing out for their own survival. He said that is where his worries grow. Get these names: dragon's blood, mandrake root, and devil's snare. Yes, all potions and spells used in the Harry Potter series. But in real life, these creepy name plants actually had medicinal purposes and could be purchased at an apothecary, also known as a pharmacy. Today, the best-preserved apothecary in the United States is not far from the studios here. It's a small museum in historic Alexandria, Virginia. And as we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, the museum provides a fascinating glimpse of medicines that were used in the past.
For more than 140 years, from the late 1700s to the 1930s, the family-owned Stabler Leadbeater Apothecary served customers with an amazing assortment of medicines. When the shop closed, the building's new owner kept it just the way it was and turned it into a museum, says manager Lauren Gleason.
A lot of the medicines that people would have been purchasing here were probably for minor ailments, rashes, skin conditions, the flu, a headache.
The Apothecary Museum contains thousands of items. They include bloodletting tools and cobalt glass bottles to store poisonous liquids. Like a modern drugstore, the Apothecary sold more than just medicine.
Lots of other chemicals like paints and dyes and perfumes would have been made and sold here, but other items like sewing machines and pens and razors and baby bottles were sold here as well.
On the store's original shelves are dozens of gold leaf labeled hand-blown glass bottles for liquids.
These bottles have probably been part of this pharmacy's collection since the 1850s.
A number of them have traces of residue from the ingredients. Others, amazingly, still contain liquids that go back decades, including cinnamon for nausea, iodine and antiseptic, and opium, which is derived from the poppy flower.
Opium was a very effective painkiller, and it would often be used to treat the flu or dysentery.
The upstairs room looks like something out of a Harry Potter movie, with its old wooden boxes and drawers for storing herbs and other botanicals. Aconite, or wolfsbane, was a topical pain reliever, but in the wizardly world, the plant helps control violence by werewolves during their full moon transformations, explains Jim Williams, a tour guide.
So if you have werewolf trouble, it gets you through to the next full moon. But the practical use was for gout and joint pain.
And then there's dragon's blood, used for making potions in the Potter series. But dragon's blood actually comes from a tree, whose red resin was mostly used as a varnish. Visitor Christine Zapata from California is intrigued by the variety of plants, which include cannabis, the marijuana plant.
Using all these different herbs and, like, you know, plant-based medicines that are, like, coming back now, and, like, people are, you know, more into the holistic. So for me, that's personally most interesting to me because I work in the cannabis industry.
While some medicines were discarded after it was known they were toxic, we still rely on others for today's modern remedies. Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
And still ahead on International Edition, the sounds of Paul McCartney and Wings. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The U.S. Geological Survey says 71% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. A couple of recent studies have also suggested that there are oceans of water deep inside our planet's mantle. Scientists suggest after its formation about 4.53 billion years ago, Earth was a dry, hot, and molten planet. A heavy bombardment of water and ice-bearing asteroids and comets several million to a billion years later provided the supply of H2O we rely on today. Now, research by a team of geoscientists from Arizona State University proposes another source of Earth's water they say has been overlooked. The sun and planets were formed from a large cloud of gas and dust containing an abundant supply of hydrogen. The study suggests a combination of all that hydrogen along with Earth's rocky materials could be the origin of most of our planet's water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And now it's time for a little something here on The Voice of America from the world of music.
Anytime, any day, you can hear the people
Paul McCartney and Wings was a rock band formed in 1971 by former Beatle Paul McCartney and his wife, Linda, on keyboards, session drummer Denny Sewell, and former Moody's Blues guitarist Denny Lane. With many personnel changes over the years, the core trio of the McCartneys and Lane remained intact throughout the group's 10 years on the road.
Indeed, we know that people will find a way to go no matter what the man says. Love is fine for all we know. For all we know, our love will grow. That's what the man said. So won't you listen to what the man said? He said,
like most of the Wings songs, Listen to What the Man Said was a big hit. Another popular song with fans was Silly Love Songs.
A successful British tour in 1973, two key members left the band, saying they were disenchanted with the group's musical direction and Linda's inclusion. With the band reduced to a trio, the McCartneys and Lane cut what turned out to be Wings' most successful album, Band on the Run. It went to number one in both the U.S. and U.K. and spawned a number of hits, including the title song.
Seeing no one.
In April 1981, Denny Lane announced that he was leaving Wing, citing the lack of tour plans as the reason. While Lane's departure effectively ended the band, a spokesman for McCartney said Wing still continued as an active concept. But McCartney finally acknowledged the band no longer existed in 1982. Paul McCartney and Wings had 12 top 10 singles in the UK and 14 top 10 singles in the United States, and all of the singles released by Wings reached the US top 40. You know what? Paul McCartney, well into his 70s, still out there touring, singing songs like Band on the Run. It's amazing. When I'm in my 70s, which is just around the corner, I'm sure I'll be sitting on the porch counting the birds flying by, not out singing if I could. Hey, listen, everybody, thanks for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Latest world news is straight ahead. We hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington. Hoping you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from Paul McCartney and Wings.
Sky.
We got this question. What does Earth look like from the surface of the moon? Could you see Earth change in phase?
You know how one side of the moon always faces us, so you'd have to be on that side to see any Earth at all. But from any part of the moon's near side, you could see Earth wax and wane, just as the moon does as seen from our world. Both the Earth and moon are always half illuminated by the sun, but from either world at any given time, you can see varying portions of that day side, or various phases of the Earth or moon.
The phases are always the reverse of each other. When we see the moon as nearly full, any moon people would see a slim crescent Earth. When we see a completely full moon, the moon, Earth, and sun are in a line with Earth in the middle. Then people on the moon wouldn't see Earth at all because it'd be hidden in the sun's glare. And when we don't see the moon, at new moon, a full Earth would shine in the lunar sky.
Also consider the moon's slow rotation. The moon appears to rise and set as seen from Earth not because of the moon's motion, but because the Earth spins once a day on its axis. Because one side of the moon always faces us, from most places on the moon, Earth doesn't appear to rise or set. Instead, from a given point on the moon's near side, you'd always see Earth hanging in your sky.
This is Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.